Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And it's time for the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz. Welcome. I'm glad that you're with us. It's episode number 168, beginning of July 2010. It has been an awful few weeks, hasn't it? Between the economic numbers that have been coming out, the market reaction, and just a general overhang of question that we're going to try to do some of our best to answer today. We have a great guest coming on, Fausto Puglisi. He is a day trader. He's a master at it. And he's going to hopefully give us some insight into what that's all about, how it works, what to do, what to look for, because I get so many questions all the time about that. And people ask me, you know, what do we do? How do we get into that? How do we understand more about just the whole idea of not only day trading, but the whole idea of understanding better about the inner workings of the stock market? So we're going to talk about that, and we also have a lot of questions that I'm going to answer that you sent me right after that interview. But first, I thought I'd start out with a discussion about what's happening from an economic standpoint, a fundamental standpoint, and maybe looking at some of the technicals as well, because it has been a very, very difficult time. Let me just tell you how difficult it is. Listen to this rundown real quick. I think you're not going to be surprised, but I think hearing it again is going to get you rather, it amazes me when I see these kind of numbers. The week-to-date changes just last week in the various markets. We're talking about the S&P down over 5% last week. We thought the week before that was pretty rough, but down 5% for the week. The Dow Jones almost 4.6. The Russell 2000 small caps down 7. Mexico down 4. Brazil down 5. And you know what? Actually, Europe looked a lot better, which was really interesting. Europe, actually, with all their problems and all the things going on, we had, the DAX was down almost 4 and the FTSE 4, which is the English or the Great Britain market. But the overall European markets were down only about 4%. Now, that's really interesting when you consider comparatively to the U.S., where we were talking an average of about 5.5%, 6% between all of our markets. It did a lot better. And you know what? The quarter to date was really the thing that was probably the biggest problem when we looked at it and looked back and reflected on what the indices did over that period. Because really, if you think about it for a second, everything was going swimmingly, wasn't it, for a little while there? And we were seeing a lot of analyst upgrades. We were seeing a lot of good or reasonable economics. The European cloud started to kind of cast a shadow over what was going on throughout the world. And then we had the BP disaster that continues to go on and without any resolution. Then we had a variety of different issues like the FinReg, and that's, you know, what's going on with that, the questions with that, and the continuation of seeing some economic indicators around the world that are slowing. That doesn't mean that they're not in a growth phase, because that's a thing that people are missing. Most of these are still in a growth phase. They're still in an expansionary manner right now, but they're slowing. Listen, trees don't grow to the sky. You can't just have things go straight up all the time. But the fact is, when you look at some of these things, like the factory orders and all that, we'll get to that in a second, they definitely had a slowing overall look to them. Leading indicators, the same thing. But really, the biggest issue of the week in terms of the economics that I think was the highlight was the restatement of the leading economic indicators in China for last month. Now, this was a restatement. The numbers were already out. Markets already absorbed about, a 1.7% increase, and they revised down to such just a paltry like 0.1. But for the quarter, listen to these numbers for a second. The S&P is down over 11.5%. NASDAQ was down about 11.8. Russell down 10. Canada down 10. Mexico down 10. Brazil down 14. And also, when we're looking at year-to-date, I mean, the numbers are just as bad. Europe, on the other hand, now, this is in constant U.S. dollars, so you have to take in consideration that was a big problem this quarter, where France was down 21%, and Germany was down. Germany was the best, down 12, and the Swiss market down 12. Of course, the Netherlands down 16, Italy down 23. I mean, and then we add into the international markets, the Hang Seng, the Hong Kong market actually did pretty good. It was down only about 5.5%. I mean, that's comparatively. But China, the CSI 300 index was down 22.5. The Nikkei from Japan was down about 11. So, you know, when we look at these numbers, we have to realize that, you know, something is going on and something is going on wrong. One of the things is the concern that China's slowing down. Here's the interesting thing about China slowing down, I think. We all want China to slow down. We don't want this bubble to be forming, as they call it. We don't want this horrible bursting of the Chinese real estate and terrible inflationary environment. So everybody's encouraged China to actually start slowing somehow. And they did so. And now nobody's happy about it. But recently they edged up their estimates in terms of GDP growth to about 9.5, I believe it was. That's still a good number. I mean, we're talking about here at 3%, possibly with 2.7 last quarter, 3%, 3.5% quarter for the next two quarters. And we're worried about China slowing because they're going to get, what, under 9? I mean, that's really kind of getting to the point of being ridiculous, asking for too much. The question was too much baked into the numbers to begin with? I'm not so sure about that. We'll talk about that in a second. But let's talk about some of the economics that came this week. And I think I want to explain some of these, or at least share with you what's gone on. And the big numbers that we saw the housing numbers, which actually looked okay. The Case-Shiller Home Pricing Index. Every other housing index looked awful. From pending home sales, I mean, just awful. When we talk about cliff diving, this is a cliff dive if you look at these charts. And we always post those on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. It looks horrible. As soon as the stimulus ran out, that was it. All bets were off and people weren't buying anymore. It just dried up. So pending home sales, existing home sales, new home sales, just off a cliff. Horrible, horrible numbers. Pending home sales month over month were down actually 30%. Pending home sales year over year is down 15%. Domestic vehicle sales were about 8.57 million, but the expectation was about 8.8. Here's where the problems have come into play, where we're seeing expectations not met. Okay? Expectations not met equals disappointment. Remember that. Personal spending was down slightly. We saw that the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Index was actually down from an expectation of about 3.2, was down slightly. We saw also the Chicago Purchasing Managers right on. That was good. Initial jobless claims tick up again to 472. Manufacturing drop off a little bit. Prices paid, which is an interesting index because they thought this was going to move up. It moved down a lot, which actually could lead to a lot better profitability, but also the potential for a deflationary environment. That's a problem. Construction spending dropped not as much as was expected, which was kind of a strange number because we all thought that when we saw the retail numbers a couple of weeks back and we saw that the biggest decline in retail sales came from the building and construction materials, about a 9.8% drop, that we would have seen this number do poorly, but it actually bested the estimates. Now, let's get to the big daddy, right? The big kahuna number. And that was the unemployment rate and the unemployment numbers. Now, here's what we were looking for. On average, the survey was looking for about 110,000 jobs added on the private payrolls. And this is on the heels even on a very disappointing ADP report that came out earlier in the week. ADP's employment change was only about 13,000, and that's the private employees, versus about 60,000. And that was a problem. But now we see that we had 83,000 actual private payrolls increase versus 110. And frankly, that was a good number. Not as good as we want it to be, But it was a good number. The last month, was revised down slightly from 41 to 33. The unemployment rate, and this is where you're going to have a lot of head scratching, and we always have, is 9.5% from 9.8. Now, that's kind of weird. We're seeing initial claims continue to be ticking higher, at least staying stable. And yet, at the same time, we're seeing a total loss of 130,000, 125,000 to be exact, payrolls, including overall manufacturing, private, census workers, etc. And we're seeing the unemployment rate drop 0.3%. Now, again, you have to remember that the difference is it's a different set of surveys that are used for both of those. And oftentimes what happens is when you see the unemployment rate drop, it's because a lot more people are no longer looking for jobs. They're disappointed, disgruntled, disillusioned, disgusted. They're done. They're not looking for jobs anymore. And what happens is they leave the job force in terms of being counted as someone looking for a job. And that's what may have happened here. After a lot of people got laid off by the census because of that was a temporary situation, maybe what happened here is that they went into the idea that, you know what, they're not going to look for a job. So they got put off from the survey, and that's why you get a 9.5. All in all, not an exciting number. And then on top of that, on Friday, we saw that the factory orders fell 1.4% when the expectation was a fall of 0.5%. Now, the problem here is that we've talked about this inventory restocking cycle, which has been on fire for a while now. But something has changed. Our initial estimates, even last year, our outlook saw that we were not going to have a V-shaped recovery, but more like a square root sign. And, you know, what we talk about is a dip down, then a come up, and then a flattening out for a while until we get things rolling a couple of years out. But what goes into that is something more important, that when we looked at this, we felt that the second half of the year is when the slowdown could start to begin. And what that would show is possibly a pullback on the market and maybe a correction. And then once that eases off a little bit, we'll see kind of the bring, you know, a move back to maybe not the highs, but a reasonable amount of return from there. What happened was, it seems to me, and where it slipped us up a bit here, I'll tell you, is that possibly a monkey wrench was thrown into the whole works. Now, nothing ever works as planned, right? Let's you know, you got to put a little range on things. But how did it move up so quickly? I was talking to some friends yesterday, some colleagues, and we talked about how 2011 we were a little concerned about, and possibly the second quarter of 2011 with all the stimulus starting to run out about there. But why now in the second half, the beginning of the second half, not at the end of the second half, which we originally said was going to be where it would really start getting concerning, why in the beginning of the second half are things getting kind of cranky? The answer has to be the European concern, the overhang of BP, all these things, and particularly in Europe, all these things are coming to a head right now and showing us that there's something else that obviously is changing the dynamic of the U.S. economy. Even Bernanke and the Fed group that came out with their Fed statement last week said that they put in a line in there that says there is some headwinds, there is some concern, and some possible problems that are going to come from the European situation. So it looks like that changed the dynamic and the timing of this right now. But wait, there's more. There's also this regulatory legislative oversight. The government is creeping in at every level, and that is also creating additional concern as we see it. It's not recent, but they've gotten really intense of late. You know, with the financial regulatory overhaul, getting involved more and more in the everyday life of talking about raising taxes, and just really they've become kind of this overwhelming, they're everywhere. You know, we see that government workers are getting paid more, the government expanding. When I talked to people just last week, I met with a woman who works in Washington, says, yeah, I walk out my door and it looks like everything is great. Everything is great in the economy. And I said, you know, the reason is for that because you're in Washington where government is growing. That is not a good way to do things. So when you put all these things together, Europe, the BP oil spill and the government, and then you took into consideration things like, you know, the extension of the homeowners credit, is that going to play? We have the 200,000 people a week that are losing unemployment benefits, and there's no end in sight until a new bill is passed for an extension. China slowing. Okay, we see that. We see big oil problems. We see gold getting fluctuated all over the place. Just on Thursday of last week, gold was down somewhere in the neighborhood of about 3.5%. The gold miners got smoked, just obliterated. Oil is starting to come down. We see the euro hitting 126 and change last week. Very interesting. Question, is that because of is it the euro that's strengthening because of the austerity measures and the overall fiscal responsibility and that they're involved with? Or, on the other hand, is it that the economics in the U.S. are making the dollar move lower? I will tell you, though, that there's a lot of carry trade being done with the euro and gold. Borrow the euro, short the euro, maybe buy gold, and that was unwound, we think, last week, or it's starting to unwind. Now, also, we have some technicals to look at, right? We have the death cross, or at least one of the death crosses, they call it, when the S&P 500, the 50-day moving average and the 200-day moving average cross. When the 50 crosses below, we have what's called a death cross, and that happened just last week. We're under the 200-day moving average. We're under the 50-day moving average. The Fibonacci numbers broke on the downside. The 1040 low broke. Next support on the Fibonacci is about 1015 or so, somewhere around there in that range. And then also, when we look at that and put it together, a lot of stocks individually are being sold off almost in a way that looks like a liquidation that we saw some time ago. It looks like there's some hedge funds that are maybe getting some calls, particularly when it comes to getting the euro really charged up, and possibly some things are getting called. And as that happens, we're seeing a reverse of what we saw before, because the euro moving up, the market still moved down. And again, oil's getting, it's very strange how oil is selling off right now. It's almost like there's some forced sales going on right now in the market. Now, I'll share this last thought with you before we get to Fausto, that it appears to me that we're starting to be yet at a point that there is so much pessimism in the market. You look at Tom Markman talks about these bottoms that we should be seeing by now. Oversold situations are just, you know, prevalent. And the mentality and the negative mentality of many people are just starting to create a negative feedback loop. And, you know, we are seeing that stocks are being sold even when we see that there are many of them that have higher earnings expectations that look pretty solid, don't look to have problems in many of the areas that other stocks may, just getting, you know, hammered. You know, you look at some of the big boys, look at some of the small boys, the guys that come out with great earnings, great outlooks, all of a sudden their stocks are doing well and the market sells off, and you know what? It sells off too. We know. As a matter of fact, Kate Stalter last week talked about this. 3 out of 4 stocks in a market correction will sell off. Now, the fact is, though, that you got to find that time, that sweet spot to either hold on or hedge your position. Right now, we have in our TDI managed growth strategy somewhere about a 40 or 50% hedge. I think it's 42% hedge on the portfolio right now. And we only have about 20% long net on the portfolio today, or as the end of the week. Now, that helped us last week a good amount, because we still see a lot of these stocks. I got to tell you that a lot of these stocks are still showing us that they're in a trend higher for now. Some of the stocks broke down very severely, though. You know, but some of these broke down, and then 2 days later, they turn back around and they move right up. It's almost like a game that's being played right now with kind of oversold, we'll buy, and, you know, overbought, we're going to sell. And stocks are fluctuating within a range, and you got to be careful not to get blown out in any one day and open up your stops right now. But at the same time, you know, it helped us over the last few weeks save some money. But I got to tell you something, we still lost money. And that's not a pleasant feeling for anybody. But the fact is that the 2 weeks prior to that were great weeks, right? I mean, think about that for a second. The 2 weeks prior to that were great weeks. So when you look at the markets right now, it appears to be very oversold. To me, from where we see numbers coming in as a market, I think there's a lot of stocks that are tremendously oversold. And maybe we'll get to that next week and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But what we want to do is, let's wrap it up. Let's bring in Fausto. Before we do so, I want to just mention that, you know, obviously the show is also sponsored by Matrix Direct. And it's all about life insurance. They help provide a safety net for you, your loved ones. And, you know, obviously insurance is important for everyone. But a lot of people don't like buying insurance, I found, and I think it's because it's complicated. You know, who wants to deal with their own death and demise? It may be too expensive. You know what, though? I don't think it has to be. You can go right to Matrix Direct, and save up to about 75% or even more on term life insurance. And you're not going to have to jump through a lot of hoops to set up. The licensed insurance agents at Matrix Direct will manage the process for you from start to finish. I mean, just, you know, 100%. And they'll even help you get your application started. They've helped over 4 million people with their life insurance needs, and I'm sure they can help you too. So just go to matrixdirect.com/TDI, and you can get information and a free quote. No reason to wait anymore. Just go to matrixdirect.com/TDI. Now, understand that policies are issued by American General Life Insurance Company of Houston, Texas, not available in all states. For details about the paid advertisement here, please visit Matrix Direct online at matrixdirect.com/TDI. And we get back, Fausto Puglisi, and then after that, we're going to answer some of your questions that you sent in at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Stick around. It's going to be a lot of fun. It always is with Fausto Puglisi from Cyber Trading University. Okay, so we've been talking about this for a couple of different weeks and saying that we're going to bring Fausto Puglisi finally back on. He's been very busy. Our schedules have been crossing for some time. He is the ultimate trader. And, you know, in this market, a lot of people have been calling me and asking or writing into me and saying, you know, how do you trade this market? What do you do with this market? You know, we have it up X amount of percent. This stock's going over here. That's going over there. You know, can I day trade? How do I learn to do it? How do I swing trade? So what we thought we'd do is about every few months, we bring back Fausto because he's the number one guy in this game when it comes to day trading, true, straight up day trading. Spend a little time asking some questions because I want to kind of go through some things and see how the game has changed over the last few months. So we brought him back, my very, very, very good friend and mentor, a guy who taught me a lot personally. I've spent a lot of time with Fausto trading and making sure that we get the best bid ask and all that for our clients. So Mr. Puglisi, how are you?
Andrew, thanks for having me again.
Thanks.
It's been a while since we been on doing this thing.
I know. It's been too long, actually. I haven't been up to New York either too much. I'm coming up to New York to do some fishing out in Montauk on sometime, I think, the week before Thanksgiving or so, or the weekend before. We're going to go out for stripers and bluefish and all that. My buddy's got a boat, and I promise him that I'm going to be there, which I've said no a few times. But Montauk fishing is the best, isn't it?
Oh, you get the best striped bass. It's like it depends. I mean, if you can go out there and max out in about an hour, or you could sit there and he could sit there and play with you, and you could just play and just kind of wait to get the big one. But there's no better fishing than Montauk out here in Long Island.
I think the minimum keeper is like 36 inches, which is a gigantic fish.
Oh yeah, I mean that's and every one you catch is 36 inches. but you'll see some. I mean, hell, I caught one that was almost 60 inches.
Wow.
That's almost like 4 feet.
Right. Exactly.
The sad part is, what are you going to do with all the meat?
Well, 60 inches is 5 feet, but that's another story entirely. Let's talk about the idea of catching the big fish when it comes to trading. So kind of let me set this up a little bit because I want to make sure everybody understands. A lot of people want to get into the game of trading, and I'm going to tell them, and I think you're going to agree with me, even though your business is to train and all that, that not everyone is, I don't think everyone's cut out to be, you know, a trader. A lot of emotions involved in it. Burnout is very easy. You know, you have to stake your own self with your money so you can be a problem, but there are some people that can actually do a great job. So now, I guess the setup is that, you know, what makes the trading different? I know you have a couple of things, but what is it about trading that you love so much?
Well, first of all, I have a passion for it, and like most listeners out there, I was a big failure rate when I first started because I thought I knew what I was doing until I had to lose a lot to realize I had to learn. And then what happened when on the first day on the job when someone taught me how to do it the right way, kind of took everything off my chest to realize I was doing everything backwards. And within time, I just started to learn how to be very, very consistent. And then you just end up realizing it's only a part-time job. And then people kept asking me, could you teach me? And you know, then we started Cybertree University. It was one of the first schools to teach people back in 1995. So, and ever since then, I really have a passion for it. And, I mean, obviously, you and I, we did a lesson together. I mean, how far back we go? Was it back in 1999, I think?
Yeah, we go back way back.
We go way back. So, and it's just, I just love teaching people and have a passion for it because I know that everyone has an opportunity and should try it. But the thing that bothers me more than anything is people want to try it, but they don't want to go out and put an investment and the time to learn how to do it first. And that's why trading is such a big failure rate, like you just said. Everyone's like, it's not for everybody, but everybody thinks it's for them, but they don't know what's really involved to do it the right way. They just think it's a green and a red buy and sell. They don't realize there's market maker traps, there's head fakes, there's ECNs, there are hiding orders on different exchanges and ECNs, and that's what I teach. And the more I do it, the more they're changing it, and you have to play the game.
That's a great question. That's a great point because, you know, over the years, you were really, as a day trader, you would be trading against professionals. You'd be trading against other traders, right? And
right.
You'd have enough of a hard time understanding what the hammer, as you would call it, the guy who's really controlling the shares in any particular stock. But these guys have so many ways to hide it right now. And this is a two-part point. And the second point is, I mean, can't these guys do a aren't there a lot of electronic means, and we'll call it artificial, the HALs, the machines that are really running things right now? And hasn't that changed the game?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Andrew. And that's what ends up happening now. And, you know, obviously, you know that when I teach my classes, you know, I'm one of the very few that will trade live with the customer. And I've been showing that more and more and more. I'll tell you what's happening. Market makers were competing against other market makers. And then, obviously, a lot of them lost their jobs. New York Stock Exchange is almost a ghost town. I mean, it's going to be a museum pretty soon. Everything is starting to become more electronic.
Right.
The more electronic, the more tickets, the more money they make in revenue. You know, that's how they make their money in the trading department. What's happening now is that, you know, there are these programs that, you know, like, for example, you know, I don't know if you want to get to about that 1,000-point drop that we had about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
These triggers are going off, and what's happening is now market makers are not competing against each other. Now they're competing against the street, which is people like, you know, your listeners right now trying to go out there. And there's a lot of program trading. It's kicking in. People are putting a lot more limit orders out there. So they kind of know where the big blocks are. And what I've been finding lately is that, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't want to trade level 2, Andrew. They say, you know, I heard that level 2, everything's a bunch of liars on there. Yes and no, but what they're doing now that I noticed, they're putting a lot more orders on ECN books. They're going out there and they're hiding orders out there, and like they'll go out there and put a bid to buy 100, 200 on the level 2, but then they're putting their 10, 20, 50,000 on an ECN book. And those are the support and resistance levels that you're seeing. And I've been seeing that up to about a past year and a half, that they're doing it more and more.
Now, are they doing that because they're trying to hide their true identities? Or is there some other efficiency, or what's the reason for that?
Well, now that level 2 is becoming, more people starting to realize it exists, and our brokerage firms starting to offer it, and, you know, it's basically the market maker's Achilles heel out there. Now what's happening, that still brokerage firms still don't offer the ECN book that much. And what's happening, so now they're starting to hide their orders on that. Remember a long time ago, remember the Instanet machine, the
yep.
Instanet book machine?
Yep.
Well, that's what the ECN book has now started to become. It's becoming the new ECN book.
Level 2, let me just explain to listeners what level 2 is, if anybody doesn't understand. A level 1 is pretty much the bid-ask. It says, okay, you know, IBM's trading at 110 to 110.25, the bid-ask. But you know what? There's a lot of people behind that. So maybe there's somebody at 109, 108, you know, there's somebody at 111 that wants to sell. But the bid-ask that you see usually when you go and buy or sell something is the best offer at the given time. Now, all those people underneath that, and maybe all the people that are offering or buying the shares, are shown on a level 2. And you can see, for example, a BAFA, Bank of America, you can see a Merrill, MER, you can see all these different market makers that are in there that are buying and selling. But then you have a list of other things like the ECNs. You have, for example, the ECN book, and it will give a island or say ARCA. And what happens is those are Archipelago, those are ones that will show up. Now you can go even further and then break down the ECN books, right? But Fausto,
right.
The ECN books don't tell you. They're totally invisible. They don't tell you who the people are there.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
ECN, by the way, because a lot of people probably want to wonder, because I always get this trivia question in my webinars, it stands for Electronic Communication Network. And I was actually one of the developers when NASDAQ started it back in 96, when they were born. But what's happening is that you, me, the listeners right now, if a brokerage firm, and by the way, has to be specifically direct access, they will give you ECN capability. And ECN is what it basically is. It allows you to become a market maker. and it's basically a book out there. You don't know who it is, you know, but it could be you, it could be me, it could be anybody, but it posts those orders, and that's why market makers are now starting to shy away from level two, even though they have to still, to become a market maker, have to post their order out there. Now what they're doing is, you know, they're not advertising as many shares like they used to, and they're routing them through ECNs. Now, the reason why they don't like doing that is because ECNs are not free. Why go out there and, you know, why should I go out there and sleep, you know, and sleep at somebody else's house and pay rent when I can sleep on my own?
Right.
Well, what's happening, everybody knows their story, so now that's why they're sleeping out, and they're routing it through a different way, and that's why ECNs are becoming a lot more powerful. Look how powerful Archipelago is. I mean, they bought out the New York Stock Exchange, for crying out loud.
Well, this is a sub-book, in other words. But so here's the point, though. So now, if we have all this going on right now, and you have all of the ECNs, and you have the market makers, et cetera, and we have the computers that can run a lot faster than any of us combined, and they're zigging and zagging, and they're doing things that are moving these markets. Because if you haven't noticed, by the way, everything that I've been reading lately from, I get on a daily basis, I get trading, a variety of trading desks, the big boys, okay? We get their notes at the end of the day, and we can find out, okay, what's happening on the desk. We're finding over the last several weeks that there's not a lot of buying going on. There's not even a lot of tremendous amount of day trading going on or individual stock moves. It's mostly based on a lot of futures trading that's moving the entire market at a time. That's why we're seeing such a correlation between almost every asset class right now. Now, I know you primarily handle ETFs and stocks. I don't think you do any futures, do you? Or do you?
No, I don't trade any futures. Right. Specifically just the individual stocks.
It's enough for aggravation just dealing with the stocks, right?
it's more control. I mean, right. At least I know what's going on.
Right, exactly. So let's just set this up. So you have this computer system, and you know, you pick up a stock to trade. I know one of the things you did in the past was you looked at the top 20 trading stocks of, let's say, the day of the week. Last week, one of the big things that was trading pretty wildly was Tesla, which was a new IPO. So you have a limited float on it. Probably could not get short shares on it. Did you trade Tesla at all?
I traded it, but what happened with Tesla, it was a very, very fast-moving stock.
Very fast.
I personally totally try to tell people don't trade IPOs because, you know, I mean, they can go up so fast. They go very, very fast, and they can come down pretty quickly depending on the movement. I mean, it's just the wicks in those stocks are up about 150% in a day,
right.
And they're not like a dollar stock that goes to 50 cents. You're talking about a $20 stock can go up to $40 and come back down to 30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people that I try to teach and try to, you know, go out there, it's not about these big wicks in the market. What you're trying to do is trying to make a day's pay. And that's what people want. I mean, unemployment is at 10%. People, you know, people wish they could just break even. Imagine showing someone how to make $50,000 a year. That's $200 a day. You don't need to sit there and trade stocks like that. I mean, it was a really nice stock. It was nice to see that we got a new IPO coming out. I remember when I first started the industry, you have five to six a week coming out.
Oh, I remember those, and they were crazy.
Yeah, remember those IPOs coming out?
Well, and then the thing is, they always do the same thing. IPO, almost all the time, this is a little off topic, but I notice when you want to buy an IPO after the IPO, is probably about an hour into it. You'll see that dip down initially, you'll have sellers come out, and when it kind of starts turning is when you want to start picking it up again, because you can probably get it at a nice price below. Again, you go for the top trading and liquid stocks and all that, and you go for the top players, so to speak, the top movers for the day and try to do it. But you know what? A lot of people I'm talking to that are doing day trading these days are not trading throughout the day. They're trading the first few hours of the day in the morning and the first few hours of the day in the evening, you know, afternoon. Is that what you're doing?
Well, it's even less than that. Sometimes like the first 15, 20 minutes, because what happens is, the market closes at 4 o'clock the day before. A lot of orders are being built up, what's happening overseas or whatever it may be. And then what's happening is that a lot of these orders, especially these online brokers, can't fill them until the market opens up. So they're having this influx of big orders coming in, and it's easy to run that wave, you know, right in instead of sitting there in stagnant water, which is in the middle of the day. And then obviously going into the close, they're having all these traders are still trying to plan, well, they don't know what everybody else is doing, so they're like waiting until the end, and then until the end comes up, that's when things will have a nice little push into it. So you're right. First hour of the open, pretty much the last half hour of the close. Most of the time, if you make your money in the morning, there's no reason to continue. But like you also said, one of the things people always ask me, Faust, what do you do when you wake up in the morning? I mean, what is your game plan?
Right.
And you just hit the nail right in the head. I just basically, no different than anybody else, I turn on CNBC, I watch and see what's hot for the day. And you know, if a company came out with news, they're going to talk it on every single station in the world, mm-hmm. okay? It's hot. What else? I mean, that's news. I mean, when you had Katrina, what do you think? Only Channel 7 talked about it?
Right.
See, I mean, it was on every station.
Right.
So same thing with a stock that's hot, like you talked about the IPO. By the way, some people don't know what that means. It's initial public offering.
Right. First time a stock is brought public to the public markets to trade.
That's right. And, you know, so, and usually I look through my top 20 list. Most importantly, I have it defaulted by percentage gainers and losers because I don't want to look at points because then I'll get the Googles and RIMs. I don't trade brand names, expensive stocks because you're also dealing with the most experienced and better traders on Wall Street, and you have to risk more money to trade them. I'm no different than anyone else, just making a day's pay, want to risk the least amount of money possible, make your day's pay, and then just enjoy yourself and spend more time with
play
your family.
Play golf, fish for stripers, you know, take a massage. Speaking of massage, this week we had a nice, this is a side note and terrible thing, but speaking of massage, you see that little article about that the groping charge is being brought back for Al Gore, that he was accused of groping a masseuse, or did you see that? I just thought that was funny.
You get what this country is coming to.
Yeah, well, or where it's gone, or where it's coming from. All right, so I know that you teach these courses. Let me clue you into the folks out there that are listening. What's really neat about one of Fausto's courses? He does a lot of free courses, but if you haven't heard me say this before, it's kind of funny because the first time I ever watched Fausto trading in the morning. And he was, and I looked and I asked a question. I said, you know, can I ask you something? Is this, you know, live? What are we looking at? What are we doing? No, this is live and it's real money. And I like started to, you know, my heart started to like palpitate. I was freaking out. I was like, wait a minute, this guy is teaching a course, okay? And he is at the same time, he's trading and having to watch that, teach this, do the slides, do this. And it was kind of, it reminded me of a guy that was standing on top of a ball with the plates, you know, juggling the plates and playing the kazoo at the same time. You know,
and I was like, watch me, I can do it. Meanwhile, the bull's going crazy.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this. Anyway, he did a great job. It's really cool to watch because you get to see actually what a level two is all about, how to actually trade, where to hit it. You know, you learn things like traps and hammers, and you know where the market makers are playing and who is the best play for the day and all. It's kind of neat. So if you want to check it out, I know that you still have the free seminars. I shouldn't say that before I know. You still have the free seminars.
Every week or every 2 weeks, what they can do is they can visit our website, and I guess we'll give it to them in a little bit, cybertradinguniversity.com. Just look right on the homepage. Also on Quick Links, we have a promotion which is called Podcast with Andrew Horowitz on the Quick Links. Just click on that, and you'll be able to register for it. And yeah, and listen, like you said, Andrew, it's one of the things that we also get along very well. There's a lot of people that try to do what I do, but there's also a lot of people that don't put their money where their mouth is and won't show it to you. You know, I didn't tell you this, but for some listeners, I mean, I know you know this, but I'm 5-time champion at the money show trading against other schools. I
right.
beat every school.
Right.
And I just got invited in September, actually on my birthday, on 18th, I'm going to Paris. I was invited to compete against the European League. So
wow.
I'm going up against every trader.
Do you guys have these shirts, like bowling shirts? So kind of like, you know, Fausto's trading team, and you guys kind of walk in with all like red trading shirts, or what? How's that work?
Well, it's just me.
Oh, it's just you. All right, that's it.
I have to make my own bowling shirt.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have my own Texas Hold'em t-shirt or something like that, right?
Yeah. So what's the biggest, let's kind of also tell people, I really want to know, I know things have changed and things are moving very quickly right now, but what's the biggest obstacle and the frustration when it comes to day trading? What are you finding right now?
Well, it's not just,
but let me interrupt, because you got to admit, and maybe I'm wrong, but things have changed over the last year or so, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So changed dramatically.
Yeah.
Things, and that's one of the things that's nice that I teach in my courses, that, you know, I do the classes every month, a month and a half, so the students can come back and retake it over and over again for free so they at least could see it. Because this is not something you can learn in a book, because a book can get outdated, a DVD can get outdated very easily. What I told, like we were just talking about earlier, is that, yes, a lot of market makers are now starting to, you know, play more head fakes on level two and then with charts and so on, and working more towards using the ECN book because not too many people have it. and they're trying to do whatever they can to stop people from following their coattails. And that's what's happening more and more that I found. But there's one thing you have to understand. You know, trading is just a game. And one of the worst things that I found that people are making also is to have the wrong execution system, which we didn't really cover, about direct access versus online brokers. I just did an event today, actually, and I was showing somebody a trade on eBay that I was doing, a live trade, and he calls up the office, and he goes, why is Fausto's quotes different than mine? And one of my education advisors says, well, what kind of brokerage account? He goes, well, he didn't want to tell us. I was like, well, if you don't want to tell me, that means that you don't have live data. I mean, probably you got to be careful because a lot of these brokerage firms don't give you real-time level 2 or real-time data, and it can cost you a lot of money. I mean, listen, just like that big crash we had when the market went down 1,000 points, I spoke to said, how'd you get a trade-off?
Hold on a second. That was not easy to get a trade-off there because there was so much volume and congestion. It wasn't that it was almost – these networks were almost clogged and dead.
Oh, they were. But if you had a direct access, you can get the trade. But some of them were just locked out; couldn't get a trade for 20 minutes.
Right. No, I agree. We had very difficult time. We had trades in, and we looked to grab a few of those. Although probably some of those would have been canceled because of the 60% rule.
Right.
But at the same time, there is. But you know what this did teach people, and it would have what you have now is you have an artificial floor right now. Think about this. We have several stock ETF. Buy orders in that stay on so that if we see another crash like that, we'll get hit on the downstroke, right?
Right.
Now, we're not the only ones that are thinking this, right? A lot of people are thinking this. So in essence, if you think about this for a moment, what you have is a automatic buy-in now where somebody else's stops will hit. So whereas before, there weren't a lot of people that may have had very low or at least lower 20% down buy orders in, people are thinking at this point, hey, you know, I have an idea. Why don't I put a 20 or 30% or 40% down buy order, good till cancel in there for a stock that I would love to have, and why not just leave it in there, and if the odd chance that this thing ever happens again, I'll get picked up. What that does is it helps to stabilize the market somewhat, different than we saw last time.
Right.
So I think that's kind of interesting. A lot of people are doing that, and all that means is that will never happen now. You know, that's the case.
Well,
you know?
One thing that I'm not a fan of that is that now what's happening, a lot of people advertising and knowing that those prices are there, which let me tell you, which is kind of freaky what happened with that 1,000-point drop. Did you know that it was literally like 2 or 8 points away from the circuit breaker to hold trading on that thing?
Which was really
literally
weird.
Literally almost, I think it was 2 points from dropping 1,000, 2 points away from a circuit breaker, and that was kind of freaky, and no one's still not able to answer that question.
Well, why did but the bigger question is, why is the circuit breaker so low?
Well, that's why they changed it now. They actually just changed it.
Right, and Citigroup hit the other day. Citi hit with the 17% down, but it was a bad trade. And the first one that hit was Washington Post, which was up 100%. And it has to happen within a 5-minute or 2-minute period that you see that kind of move. And they'll stop it and halt the stock for a little while. And the other, you know, but that whole thing was a mess. But those are the oddball situations that happen. The biggest things that people, I think, do is they try to trade with a broker, and maybe they're getting live trade data, maybe they're getting 2-minute delay, and they're wondering why they're doing that. And the other thing that they do wrong a lot of times is they put in market orders. Now, you could do a market order, I think, if you're trading with a level 2 and you see there's a lot of, you know, let's say there's just a huge amount of position on the ask and you're ready to hit that ask and you just want 1,000 shares, but there's maybe, I don't know, 50,000 offer, right? So,
right.
I mean, you hit the market. So what are you going to get? You're not going to get anything bad on that situation, right?
But you're there. You're standing there. I mean, you see it. Yeah, but listen, stockbrokers, I mean, obviously, this is not 1990 anymore. I mean, you know, this is not
not your grandfather's stock movie. Market, right?
Yeah, I mean, this ain't the movie Wall Street anymore. I mean, now it's a lot more people are now starting taking matters in their own hands. And that's why, like in my business, why education is becoming such a very big business, because people say, well, what do I need to give a mutual fund? Listen, believe it or not, you know how many hedge fund managers I've trained? I just trained. It was the weirdest, the freakiest thing. I trained 3 hedge fund managers in one class. And it was just weird because it was like one guy managed a $500 million fund, another was a $50 million, another one was a quarter, $220 million fund. And they didn't want to tell us that they did, but you know, obviously, you know, after building a relationship with them, they kind of openly said it, and because sometimes they don't even understand why the market's reacting the way it does.
Well, know? The difference between investing and trading is very different. Let's just get that straight.
It's very different, but it also helps you learn how to be more disciplined on your positions. Like personally, I'd tell you about myself. I mean, I had all my positions in my IRA, you know, and I sold everything.
Right.
I sold everything. I'm like, you know what? I'm not making any money in those positions, that account. I said, you know, I'm going to sit in cash. I sold everything like 2 months ago.
Right.
I says, you know what? I'm not even bothered. It's not going anywhere. Right. For the past 6 months, from prior, I was like pretty much flat. I'm like, something's going on, and I don't like. Actually, personally, I don't like what's going on with the market right now.
Right. I know you know somebody that had a huge position in, for example, of Bank of America. And I want to bring this story out that, and you can kind of, you know, tell me not the details of it, or a big position in whatever it was. And, you know, they were holding it. It went up, it went down, it went up and down. And they were hoping, right? Is this a good statement? They were hoping that it would continue moving in a certain direction rather than having a discipline, right?
Right.
And, you know, what happens with that kind of circumstance is that you could luck out. Or at the same time, you know, you could have a situation where it goes against you, and then you're and you have no plan. I think one of the things that Fausto was talking about is when you roll up and wake up in the morning and watch CNBC or Bloomberg or whatever you do and read the paper, whatever it is, that you have a plan for the day when it comes to trading. Now, it's different than coming to investing, because you're not going to have a plan every day for investing. You know where you want to be. But when it comes to day trading, when it comes to actual scalping, etc., you have to have a plan. And that's probably any listener that's done this before. If you don't have a plan of where you're going to buy, where you're going to sell, how much loss you're going to take, what your risk factor is going to be. So something like this: I'm willing to buy 100 shares of the SPY for where it is now, and I'll take a risk of 30 cents to the downside. Now, that doesn't mean if it goes down to 30 cents, you say, well, we'll watch it a little bit longer and see what happens. That's right? You know what I'm saying?
Andrew, it's one of the biggest things that I teach in my class, and believe me, as much as I have passion to teach, I would totally get upset with a student that I would train and tell them, because that's how I was trained. I literally had to sit. I mean, I didn't have like these programs like these people have today with these paper trading execution systems. You could put it on demo mode and paper trade. I literally had to sit behind somebody and write it down, and then my mentor says, okay, Fausto, I want you to write a ticket where you think resistance is. And when they hit resistance, when the thing reversed, he wanted me to give him the ticket to show him. If I didn't have it, he went off on me.
Right.
And I've learned a lot that you have to have a game plan. And, you know, if you're doing, like you just said, hope is one of the worst words in the trading business.
Right, right.
Hope and overnight positions are the biggest two failure rates, which you do not want to do in this trading market. You must have a game plan at all times. It's in every single part of my lesson planner. I sit there and show people that, you know, once you buy a stock, it's okay to take a profit. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, like getting back to the movie Wall Street, you know, greed is not good. Greed is bad, you know, because, you know, we're not looking to hit home runs. We're looking to hit base hits.
Right.
We don't want to sit there and strike out because,
you
know, we love this game.
Yeah, I hear you. So trading, I mean, I would encourage everybody to check it out just for nothing else, the fun of it, and to see what it's all about. Go to CyberTradingUniversity.com and you can check out a free live online course from Fausto.
With me.
Yeah, with Fausto.
Nobody else
with Fausto. You're going to be with Fausto only. And I encourage you to do it, because I think it's a great part of learning. If nothing else, learning some more points about in the investing environment. Because if you're investing at all, and if you're playing the game, I don't care if you're investing or speculating, trading, scalping, swing trading, or investing over long haul, buy and hold, I don't care. The fact of the matter is that you need to know all aspects of the game. You need to know all pieces of the puzzle, whether it's the fundamental analysis, technical analysis, and the actual trading, the pricing mechanism that goes into the actual execution and the trade, to understand what's going on. So if you don't want to be a day trader, fine. But the point is that you need to know what's going on. And the more knowledge you have, and that's what we do here all the time, is try to bring a little bit more knowledge, a little bit more information, so that you can kind of say, okay, well, you know, what do I want to do with this? What can I do with this? The more knowledge, I've always said this, the more knowledge you have in some area, the better you'll be at it. So with that, I thank you, Fausto, for joining me today. Fausto Puglisi from CyberTradingUniversity.com. Of course, we'll have his bio, his links, all the good stuff on the show notes. And when we get back, we're going to answer a lot of questions. I got a pile of emails from you guys. We're going to answer a lot of questions that you have on all sorts of subjects. So we're going to stick around for a second. Fausto, thanks a lot, buddy.
Andrew, it's always been a pleasure. Thank you. And everyone, thanks for listening. Hopefully see you in my upcoming class.
All right, that's great. Fausto Puglisi, great guy. So let's get to some questions here. What do we got? I got a lot of paper everywhere. Paper everywhere. We'll try to hit some of the highlights. I got a question from, let's see, who's this from? What's the, okay, Micha. I think it's Micha. He says, Andrew, on the latest Discipline Investor podcast, you said you stayed away from Medifast due to fraud concerns. How do you find out information such as fraud concerns for a popular stock or a particular stock? Thanks for putting on such an interesting, informative podcast. Hey, you're welcome. You know, one of the things you can look at is the Fraud Discovery Institute. I think it's the FraudDiscoveryInstitute.net. But you know what? I'm not 100% trusting them. You have to do, you know, the standard due diligence. Like anything else, you could do things like, you know, looking up on a variety of better business bureaus. You could look at things that are coming across the wires. If, you know, one of these things on the penny stocks, if it looks too good to be true, then maybe it is. You know, the question about Medifast is, and a few of these others, there's been other companies that have had, let me separate this, not talking about Medifast here. There have been companies out there that have had significant amount of concern about their balance sheet, their cash flow statements, their accounting methodologies, and we've seen that in the past, and there's been some trouble raised and concerns and SEC investigations. What we're talking about is when we see the continuation of things come across the news lines and searching through the news for maybe something like Medifast and fraud, put that in a Google search, or about other companies, you know, you have to look at what they're dealing with, what the fraud is all about. Is it simply something like they're saying they could do something that maybe a few people are aggravated, like weight loss, they can't lose the weight? None of us have had that problem, right? No, not us. But, you know, the fact, especially on this July 4th weekend, right? No, we're not eating too much from the barbecue, are we? No. But you have to find out where the information is coming from. Make sure, by the way, that it isn't just information from a competitor trying to diss the other company that you're looking at. So Fraud Discovery Institute is something that I've looked at before, and I thought it was interesting. But anyway, nonetheless, I got a list of Jamie Dimon's summer reading for his interns. Jamie Dimon, of course, from J.P. Morgan. And he said that, he says, a number of you already emailed me for favorite books. He didn't write this to me, by the way. This is general, kind of a little aside here. Here's the books that he recommends. The World is Flat, Competitive Strategy, Techniques for Analyzing Industries and Competitors. Security Analysis, classic 1940 edition, of course. The Intelligent Investor, Jack Straight from the Gut, Sam Walton, Made in America. Double Your Profits in 6 months or Less, Built from Scratch, Only the Paranoid Survive, and Build to Last. A whole bunch of others, but I thought those were kind of interesting ones that you would be interested in. Let's see. Let's get to the next one here. There was a couple of more questions. Okay. There was a question about, let me just get through some of these accounts to see who this is from. I have such a hard time. Okay, Joe. Signed Joe. Joe says, first, I love your podcast. You do a great job. Thanks, Joe. I have one comment to those to you and one question. First, the question, what company do you think is set to profit the most as a result of the big influx of IRA conversions coming when people start trying to be sheltered from the expiring Bush tax cuts? There's an article in the Wall Street Journal claiming billions would be transferred. Clearly, the number one beneficiary, by no doubt, no question about this, the number one beneficiary of conversions from IRAs, regular IRAs, to Roth IRAs is the government. Seriously, think about that. Is there any other company that could benefit? Well, I mean, is it going to be a Schwab or Fidelity's not traded, unfortunately. But, you know, there's no particular company besides maybe the mutual funds, but that's money in, money out, right? They don't really benefit. So I don't see this as anything more than putting the money from the right pocket to the left pocket with less taxes, with more taxes taken out, less money in your left pocket when you finish. And in the end of the game, the bottom line is that the government is clearly the one that will benefit from this. He said, second, I want to be careful. He told me to be careful with slot stocks. He lives in Massachusetts, and already after trying to alter the proposed casinos to have no slots because they only want table games, create more jobs, just something to think about. You know, I'll mention to you there's a few companies out there that we like, Shufflemaster, WMS Industries, IGT, BYI. These things have been just real dogs, and we actually cut our positions in them, but we will be going back into those when we see them starting to turn. We think there's a great opportunity. We just don't want to continue to get dragged down by these things, even after we see analyst after analyst agreeing, and we see the continuation of legislation around the country showing that we're going to see additional gaming in the various states. In addition to that, we see Singapore, the Las Vegas Sands opening there. We see the continuing of the refresh cycle in Canada and in the United States, in Vegas, less in Atlantic City. And we see a lot of really good things happening when it comes to not only the table games, but the whole casino industry. But the question then remains also, what if consumer confidence is down? And what if we do see a slowdown in the next year or so? What's that going to do to the casinos? The thing here is that many areas outside of the country here are still doing very well. And with the yuan appreciation and the opportunity for Macau to continue doing well, Singapore, et cetera, there's an opportunity there. So I agree with you, but some of these companies are international, so we don't just rely on them alone. Last question. This one is from Chris, Christopher, and he says, boy, Terry Bedford called it right with the S&P at 1227, then down. Can you get him on again and see where he thinks things may go from here? Thanks. Yeah, no, we'll do that. Actually, I don't think we hit that exact high. We didn't hit the top that he had anticipated. But yes, he was right about that, and along the way, getting short. And at this point, you know, keeping on those shorts till we get above the next level on the top end, at least for a protection standpoint, to stabilize the portfolio makes a lot of sense if you're not just simply trading. But hedging right now, even to mitigate your risk in what we see a correction in a longer-term bull trend, is good. But again, there's going to be times that you think that the whole world is just coming down on you and there's just no relief in sight. And, you know, for those of you who do that, maybe it's just time to kind of step aside for a little while. But we do think that being involved, at least whether you're in short, long, neutral, longer than short, shorter than long, at least involved in the game, there's an opportunity for you. And you know what? So you lose a few bucks, you make a few bucks in the turmoil, but the long-term plan is what we always look for. So if you're interested in seeing what we do, of course, check out the 14-minute virtual tour over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com and see what we can do for you and see if you want to be involved in our transparent and very interactive discussion in terms of what we're doing for your portfolio. And we put a discussion of each and every day's activity and what's happening in the markets, graphs, things that you won't see anywhere else, giving you ideas on top of that for our private clients. And, of course, that's a $50,000 minimum. If you're interested, maybe now's the time. Maybe it's not. Whatever you want to do, that's what we're here for. Until the next time, thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, signing off episode number 168. Have a wonderful, wonderful 4th of July weekend. Take it easy. Get some rest. Do what you can to spend a little time in the fun and sun, et cetera, and really just enjoy for a few days the time off. And then we'll get crazy again next week with what happens with the markets, the world, the politics, and all the things that surround whatever is going to throw our way. I'll see you soon. Thanks for your support. Thanks for your great emails. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.